The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind.
Well, hey, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Invictus Mind podcast, the number one show dedicated to helping you find political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. This is your host, Mike Corbell. And if I were to offer you any advice for these troubling times we are living in, the first step would be to turn off your phone, your television, or your computer. Just forget about the news and go outside and enjoy the wonderful soon-to-be spring weather. But if you just can't turn off your phone, hopefully it's because you absolutely love this show and are enthusiastically waiting for some positivity in your life. Well, today I think we are going to fulfill that desire. It is another day. You are breathing another breath, and you have another opportunity right in front of you to change your perspective, your patterns, and the path to the life that you really want to have. Yes, the economy is in trouble. Yes, we might be on the brink of World War III. And yes, the struggle to maintain our individual freedom is fading fast. But here on this show, we don't dwell on negativity, but rather on solutions. We want to overcome, we want to persevere, and we want to be invictus. That means unconquerable, by the way. I think my guest today is going to be providing a lot of that information for us. But before I introduce him, I would like to ask those listening to the program to leave me a review of this show. Of course, you can find this podcast on any of your favorite stations, including YouTube. But if you want to like the direction that we're heading in, Just please go to Apple Podcasts, write me a review, tell me what you like, what you don't like, and what topics of conversation you want this show to focus on. Of course, I'm always going to make sure to share my own thoughts and bring on some great guests to share their stories, but my hope is not just be another unknown voice in a sea of information, but to bring you the value you deserve and to deliver an entertaining program that you would love to share with those who hear it. All right, so let's get started. With me today is a man who has a remarkable story. You know, when I first learned about him, I wasn't sure which direction I wanted to take this interview. And you understand why I say that when he starts to tell his story. But the thing I was most interested in is his mindset. He seems to have an uncanny ability to look at life's challenges and to overcome each of them and to not just get by, but to thrive. He says his life is a combination of the Rocky story, Think and Grow Rich, and the Celestine Prophecy on steroids. He was born in Detroit, Michigan, to parents actively fighting for the civil rights movement. In grade school, he forced to deal with some of his personal challenges of having dyslexia and other learning disabilities, including being legally blind in one eye. Not only was he bullied by his peers and other adults, one of his elementary school teachers ridiculed him and told him to drop out of school because they said that he was too stupid to graduate. However, not only did he not get stopped by that, he actually eventually recognized the gifts that were really bestowed to him. With the help of his mother, his sister, a special teacher, and services for the blind and disabled, he became an avid reader and a leader in school, including vice president of the student body. He not only graduated from high school, but went on to earning a bachelor's degree in speech and communications in college with a minors in religious studies and Eastern philosophy. In addition to that, he is an athlete with a strong knowledge of martial arts and yoga, and a fanatical approach to studying health and nutrition. Furthermore, my guest went on to become the founder and CEO of Consulting Ace Incorporated, and also the creator of the Seventh Foundation, whose mission is to be a catalyst that spurs meaningful, positive change within people's lives in order to create a world of lasting peace and happiness. He is the author of a book entitled The Way, Seven Revolutionary Steps to Living a Meaningful Life and Making a Difference in the World. I'd like to welcome to the program, Andrew Calderella. How are you doing today, Andrew?
Doing well. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, I hope I covered some of the most important things in your profile. There was a whole extensive background there, and maybe you can share some more of your story and let me know what I missed.
Sure. No, you did a great job. the whole idea of the Celestine Prophecy, Think and Grow Rich, and the Rocky story was actually, I didn't come up with that. It was a PR group of men who and women who were sitting around and learned about my life. And they said, oh, your life is like this. So I think we just created that and used it in the intro. It was tough growing up, honestly, you know, being bullied and having all my challenges in school and all the rest of it, you know, led me down a path of negative thinking and to thoughts of suicide and, you know, really put a damper on my childhood because I was a really, you know, energetic kid. I was really happy. But after a while, you know, you wake up every day and people are calling you stupid and throwing you in trash cans and destroying everything that you love and whatever. It really kind of takes it out of you to the point where you didn't want to go to school. You didn't want to wake up anymore. And that was where my life started. So, you know, from there to get to the point where you could overcome the negative thinking, depression and suicidal thoughts and addiction and to be able to bring these solutions to the world that I found after 30 years of work and strife and struggle and whatnot it's still dawning on me that I'm actually here. And I have written a book because anybody knows that if you have dyslexia, writing is not your forte, you know, it's like deciphering code. But every time I did all this research and I found all these solutions, I kept sharing them with people and everybody just kept telling me, you got to share this with the world. And like I said, it took me 30 years to get here. I feel like I'm a little late, but you know, my friends would keep telling me, no, you're here at the right time. This is exactly the time you need to be here. So anyways, I am here and I am sharing the solutions I found. And I just want to say that this is more than a book. This is a mission of mine, but it's the solutions really on how we can become our best and fix our world. So, and that's what I'm trying to share with everybody.
Yeah. And I don't think there's a much more prescient time as today when all of the calamities that we see all around us. That's why at the intro, I said, you know, sometimes the best solution is just to turn off your social media and your television and you know, maybe read a book or just go outside and do something else. But, you know, Andrew, I invited you on the show because I really just from looking at your profile, I really, really believe that you're one of these positive characters in the world and somebody that needs to have their voice heard. Because, you know, where are people looking for good advice these days? I mean, myself, I look to religion and scriptures, and not everybody is like that, but there are other places of positivity. And hopefully you can inspire this audience as much as just learning about you has inspired me a little bit.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I'm very close to God. God's been part of my life since I was a kid. And I honestly don't know that I would have made it if it wasn't for my belief in God and obviously for my mom and other special people in my life. We all need those people to help us when we're down. And I had a lot of spiritual experiences that led me here. And I believe that our life, you know, we're inhabiting these bodies for a short amount of time, but it takes effort to become the best person you want to be. And what we found is obviously faith is an important thing, but our religions and faiths has somewhat failed us. I mean, it's been thousands of years being ruled by the holy people, by the so-called successful people. And where has it led us? You know, when I start the book out, the very first chapter is all about this idea between success and true success and what the difference is. And I think that's pretty important to understand right now. If you'd like, we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be able to talk about your book. When I first discovered the title, The Way, my mind went instantly to that show, The Mandalorian, you know, a Star Wars spinoff. And of course, for those not watching this, he has the Cloud City in the background. So it's kind of fitting. Yeah. But, you know, The Way, of course, according to The Mandalorian, he had his own set of principles and his own set of philosophies. But you mentioned 30 years of work have kind of led you to discover the truths in your own life that, you know, are probably important for people to learn about in this world. Not only can they, you know, read scriptures and great books, but I think just some of your shared experiences would be a benefit to the audience.
Exactly. You know, what I found is that when I said The Way, I kept sharing the solutions I found. And, in 2015, I actually had this huge breakthrough. I've been doing all this work for 30 years. And it was literally like I had this encyclopedia broken up into four sections of self, society, universe, and God, which are the main pillars of life. And I kept finding my references to this is key to true success. This is key to true success. And I put these seven keys together in the right order. And it was like a secret code got unlocked. And I could see how a lot of the epiphanies and ways of being that I had found through all these years fit into these seven steps. And I can explain it because nobody wants to read an encyclopedia. You want to read something that kind of flows and makes sense. And this, the idea of the way is really the human way. This isn't Andrew's way. This is the human way that we become the best people we can be, as well as fix our world. And as you know, and everybody's told me, right, if any major foundation of your life falls apart, whether it be your relationships, your health, your finances, or whatever, it can ruin you and it can take you off your game. So the whole idea of being human is, you ever seen those guys with the sticks and the plates and they're balancing them on all the plates? You ever see that? Yeah, It's life is like that. You've got to keep all of these plates balanced, or you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So the goal of humanity, and I found this throughout my coaching training, you know, throughout these 20 years I've been helping people, is that you need to shore up all of these foundations if you're really going to be your best, because any one of those can take you out of your game and really kind of destroy your life. So when I created the way, it was the way, how do we get everybody on the same page and walk them down the steps to where we have this foundational knowledge that we can all stand on and become the best people we can be, but also fix our world, because we're not an island unto ourselves, right? We're part of a community, a society, and it's not just your local one that matters. It's the larger one that you're in, but also the world that we live in, because it just takes a couple lost people to destroy everything for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to really kind of get everybody on the same page if we're really going to make this work. And that's what the way is about.
Well, I can appreciate that. You know, somebody as such as yourself, just from what you've shared with us already, is that, you know, you've had to overcome a lot of challenges in life, you know, starting in school. You know, I know some people who have learning disabilities, and, you know, I think just about everybody I ever met has been a victim of bullying in school at one point or another. But you having to overcome those challenges to really learn about those discoveries and be able to write about them.
Yeah. And it seems like the bullying never really stops. There's bullies that weren't corrected as kids and they grow up and they create problems in our society. The problem is that a lot of times the bullies are the A personality men that just weren't raised correctly. And, you know, when I was a child and I was going through this, it's always the bigger kids, you know, like the in elementary school, you know, one grade, two grades, three grades above you that really torment you. They always pick on the kid. You know, I'm wearing a patch over my eye. I can't read. I'm carrying around these huge books that have letters in them that are huge because I can't see very well. And I'm easy target, obviously, you know, hitting me on the side of the head where I can't see, or, you know, just picking my stuff up and throwing in the trash cans or whatever it may be. I don't know what it was about being a kid, but the, you know, stripping people down, pantsing them or whatever was a thing. It just was, you know, just a horrible way to grow up. But as you grow, you get to the point where you're like in sixth grade, you're as big as the bullies that are in your age. And I'm a pretty big guy, luckily. And I was able to, my dad taught me how to fight. Since I was a young kid, I've been in martial arts. And after two fights in sixth grade, it all stopped. But it was such a surreal experience, because these bullies that have been picking on me my whole life, basically, wanted to be my friend all of a sudden. I don't know what it is, but it's called a bully beatdown mentality. Like, you beat up a bully and all of a sudden they want to be your friend and they learn something. And I found that a lot of bullies, it's a cry for help. They need help because their home life isn't what they're not getting what they need. And a lot of times it's very traumatic and dramatic. And sometimes they're being bullied at their home, you know, by their parents. So as a society, we need to learn how to help these children instead of just disciplining them, saying, oh, just go home, go sit in the corner. It's like, no, you need to help these kids learn empathy and sympathy, the golden rule, treating others as you want to be treated, seeing other people as equals, really instilling this idea into them so that they can learn how to become better people, becoming a protector instead of a bully. They get a similar feeling of power, but it's a good thing that they're doing, right? They're protecting a kid. They're standing up for kids instead of bullying them. So, you know, for me, it's always been about, you know, how do we fix our society? And again, I said, like we started in the book with the idea of the difference between success and true success. And I think that as a starting point kind of gets everybody on the same page. And that's where, you know, I think right now with our society and what's happening in the world, everybody tells me it's even more prescient. So it's a good place to start, I think.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you said that the book is seven revolutionary steps to living a meaningful life and making a difference in the world. I don't want to dwell on the background so much, but you know, I'm thinking when you were talking about bullying in school, we have all these programs now, all these teachers programs and, you know, parent teacher associations are trying to stop the bullying in school. But the reality is sometimes you just got to punch the bully in the nose. That's what my dad always told me too, you know, and, you know, we don't necessarily think that's a wise solution to life's problems. It's just to, you know, to use violence. But sometimes what are you going to do? I mean, hopefully we can teach them things like empathy and sympathy and things of that nature. But, you know,
well, let's talk about that for a second, because the idea of punching somebody in the nose, it's the idea of the bully beatdown. We can think about this in World War II. Look at World War II as a good example. Germany and Japan, the sickness of superiority. We're the chosen people to rule the world. We're better than everybody else and all of that. We go in there and we beat them down. We have the point to where we could have literally taken over the country and killed everybody if we wanted to, but we didn't. We showed mercy. We then helped them stand back up. And I lived in Japan, right? And I talked to some of the older women and men there through my translator. And one of these older women who was alive during there, she was really old, and she told me as a kid, they were all amazed at what happened in Japan. Yes, it was brutal. We did bomb them, but we didn't bomb some areas of their sacred cities. Then when we took them over, we didn't round up everybody and put them in camps and make them our subservient. And what she told me is that's what they would have done. They treated us like animals. They thought that they were superior. They were the chosen people. The same thing with the Germans. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was this sickness of superiority, this idea of pride that's in the seven deadly sins, is about humanity not seeing people as equals and not treating people as we want to be treated. And this whole idea of the bully beatdown isn't so much a punch them in the nose and then just keep beating them up. When I was in these fights in like sixth grade, it was to defend myself. But then when I won, I didn't keep beating on the guy. You know what I mean? I didn't make fun of them. I didn't strip them down and throw them in a trash can or whatever it may be. It was just now stop. You know what I mean? It was like, this is the end. Don't ever do this again. You know what I mean? It was a warning. And I think that this idea, I've been in a lot of fights throughout my life. I can't even tell you. This idea of, even as an adult, I swear to you, I've had encounters that are just the most surreal things. I literally walked into a flower shop to buy a flower for my mother and was all of a sudden attacked. So this idea of then when you stop the bully and you make them look stupid and you show them mercy, it's so surreal how much they want to be your friend or buy you a beer or what it is. And I think that there's this idea that we gain power by picking on the weak and we feel strong. But then when we're shown that we're weak and we do not have that kind of power, but then the person shows us mercy, it triggers something in us like, wow, this is what I really wanted to understand, you know, as a being, as a human. Nobody wants to be corrupted and negative and bullied and all this kind of stuff. We all want to be better people. And this idea of, like in kids, when we fight, there is a point to where if the bully will not learn through, again, I'm a big believer in bringing them up in front of the class, making sure that they apologize, understand this idea of treating others as you want to be treated. Because if you just hide everything in the background, they're in the principal's office, they're here and there, the whole rest of the class doesn't see this. And it's the peer group, everybody around you that's snickering or laughing and seeing this, that eggs on the bully or doesn't say anything. But if they're also exposed to the apology, to the idea of, you know, we don't treat people like this, that it can psychologically be a bully beatdown, right? That's why you don't necessarily have to punch the bully. But if you handle the psychological aspect properly, you can change children because they're very emotionally in tune, especially to their peer group. And the peer group's all looking down on them for what they've done. And they've given an opportunity to become a better person, to become a protector instead of a bully. Often they'll take that. And again, there are times where you do need to, because we're men, we learn through violence sometimes. I hate to say that. But if you do beat down a bully, I've done it numerous times, that they will wake up sometimes. There was even a show. I can't even remember. There was a fighting show. I don't know if you remember where this guy would get in the ring with bullies and they would beat him down and try to teach him some type of lesson. And you know, it does work that way sometimes, but that's not the first choice, you know, obviously, that we want to take.
So where does this mentality come in for you? I mean, I understand that you studied martial arts and yoga. Was it from that kind of training, or was it just you had an epiphany one day that, you know, the bully beatdown just wasn't the right avenue to go down? How did you change that mindset?
I don't know that it ever changed. I never wanted to fight. You know, okay. I wanted to just not be attacked. You know what I mean? It's like, I think there, when you go into martial arts, you will find that probably half the kids in these programs are bullied. I can't tell you how many times I went in there and talked to these people, and they all have these stories. And they're like, yeah, my dad put me in martial arts because I was being tormented in school or whatever. And we all want to have our kids grow up and not have these horrible experiences. And when you study certain types of martial arts, like Aikido is a martial art where you're using the person's force against them, meaning, you know, their momentum and everything else. You learn how to use circles and whatnot. And as a child, that's a really great martial art to learn because it teaches you, because you're smaller, how to use their weight and their, you know, momentum and everything else against them. And, you know, when you take a bigger kid and you turn really fast and you throw him to the ground, you're like, please just leave me alone. There's this moment to where everybody's like, oh, wow, you know, what just happened? And if you're able to keep doing that, the bully realizes he's not going to win and he's going to keep looking stupid, where I didn't actually hurt him. I just showed him that he's not going to be able to do this to me. I was also a bouncer when I was in college in a club. In my college town, every single week, you can imagine there was, some trauma fight situation going on, from knives to guns. I've broken up knife fights. I've saved guys' life that was stabbed. I've so many different experiences. And in every single one of them, when you get to the end, I've actually had people thank me for the way that I've handled the situation because I didn't beat them up. You know, I mean, the reason I became head bouncer in that club and the other guy was fired because a lot of these bouncers, they do, you know, take advantage of it and they become brutal and, you know, ha ha, you made a mistake. And now I get to beat the crap out of you and throw you on the cement and, you know, do all this horrible stuff to you. And I was never like that. I was always like, dude, you're out of control. You need to get out of here right now. You know, we're going to call the cops or whatever it may be. And I think that this idea of treating each other with respect, no matter what the situation is, plays out in the long run to create a better world, because even the guy, I was broke up this knife fight and I saved this guy's life. I mean, he came back to me later and thanked me and all his friends. He wanted to give me money. I was like, no, I don't want any money. I just did this because I wanted to help you and save your life. And all I said to him was just pay this forward. You know, you have an opportunity now. You survived. He almost died in my hands to make your life a better life. You know, so, you know, I think this is the test of humanity here, right? Are we going to fall to the dark side? Or are we going to go to the light side? Use the Star Wars mentality. Right. And I think that plays out in the world. That's really kind of center to this whole idea of, are you a good person? You know, what is your character? What happens in each one of these life challenges? Which way do you go? And that's what I'm here for, I believe, is to share some of these insights, because the way is, again, the way that we can all become the best people we can be. And to do that, we all just need to really understand certain principles as well as take certain actions. It's like, if you take the best practices in life and you integrate them into your life, you become a better and better person. It's just how it works, because we work on a cycle, you know, day repeats itself over and over again. So every day you get an opportunity to make it better, right? And if you just know what to do every day and how to think properly, you can make yourself a better person. And that's what I think the world needs. We need a collective understanding of certain principles that we all share, this collective human moral code or core belief system that will allow us to navigate life and create a better world. It's really not as hard. I know I'm going on a little bit, but it's really not as hard as everybody makes it out to be. You know, we have these lost leaders. There's literally about 100 people and 100 companies that are destroying everything for everybody in this world. And if there are billions of us who want a better world, to live this better life, nobody wants destructive businesses and, you know, unfunctioning government and all their other problems and pollutions and trauma and drama that we see in our world. We want to live our nice life. We want to have opportunities for our children to grow up in a healthy, happy, thriving world and all the rest. So the problem is really, how do we do it? What are the literal steps that we need to take to fix this world and make ourselves better people? And that's what this is all about, is about how we can actually do that as a species, to live up to the noble calling of what we are meant to really be.
Right. We're called to be the example to the world and to diffuse violent situations and to be leaders among men. And, you know, I'll share a little bit of my background with you, Andrew. You know, I come from the political activist world. And, you know, I've stopped in recent years, like, worrying about what we're going to do in politics, because I just think it's a lost cause. So I'm just like, I'm just going to live my life in a way that I can create my own freedom and create my own success and hopefully be that example to other people. And, you know, there's many people who still want to complain all the time, and they always want to fight back, you know, and proverbially speaking, you know, punch that bully in the nose, that government figure, those 100 people who are causing problems in this world. And I'm like, there has to be a different solution to this, because you mentioned there's billions of us and, you know, 100 companies, 100 men who are wreaking all this havoc. But I'm not sure that necessarily just walking away and ignoring them is also the way to do it either. We have to be leaders in the front. We have to show people how we can actually change the paradigm of the way people look at things.
Absolutely. And I think that what you just hit on is kind of what gets me up and makes me do this. I've given up a lot to obviously get the book out there. Like you mentioned, I have a consulting business. I have other businesses that I've run, but I kind of put them all on the back burner just so they can support me to do all this research and find these answers, because this is the most important thing to do in the world. Everybody keeps telling me that what I found is the solution. I share it with, you know, Harvard grads to the everyday man, and everybody keeps telling me that, yes, this is true once they understand what it is. And I think this idea of, you know, like, what is the true goal of life and how do we become better people? We can't walk away from politics, because politics and religion and everything else, the most, you know, devoted people, sometimes they could become the leaders. And over years and years of these devoted extremist people taking control, we end up with fractured faiths. You can see how many different Christian faiths are there? How many political parties? How many political parties have gotten more and more and more extreme over the years? And this is one of the systems that we need to create. Is a new party for the world and a new movement. You mentioned the 7 revolutionary steps. It's revolutionary because, one, the publishers, when they saw it, they said that nobody's ever written a book like this. Everybody usually regurgitates stuff from Covey or Hill, and it's just, you know, redoing the past in a different way. And they said, your philosophy is a totally new philosophy. It's as big as, a training opportunity as Anthony Robbins or something like that. And kind of blew me away, because I had no idea what I was doing, or even that my writing was that good. And they said that, no, your style of writing is unique and it's wonderful, and the way you broke up the book and all this stuff. So it's revolutionary because I actually list out the steps on how we can peacefully force positive change within step 6 of the book. And this idea that there's 100 people, 100 companies out there that are ruining it for all of us just means that we need to either A, get them to wake up and become better people, right? Integrate the ideas of people are equal, treat people as you want to be treated, as well as respecting life, respecting our world, and taking care of it. I mean, those three principles, just, you know, in step 4, we cover this idea of having a core belief system, a moral code that's going to guide you throughout your life. And this is really important, because most people don't really understand what their moral code is or the core values are. They have a couple of them, but they're not complete. And if you don't have that, it can ruin us, because our core beliefs affect everything and all of who we are. They are the filter that we judge everything through. So if you have a complete core belief system that does cover all of life, it'll help you navigate life. And 3 of these principles I just mentioned, seeing everybody as equals, treating others as you want to be treated, as well as respecting life, taking care of our world, are 3 things that those simple things can change everything. Because there's no way that anybody's going to be like, you're not killing George Floyd on the street and treating people that way if you see everybody's equal and you're treating them as equals or as you would want to be treated. You're also not destroying the world, the Amazon basin, the Congo basin, and destroying our ability to breathe and, you know, be thriving human beings on this planet if you really understand the principle of caring for our world. And everybody I talked to was like, yeah, those, of course, we all believe those, but we have to integrate them in our society in a way that they're reflected in our institutions, in our organizations, in our businesses, in our government and everything else. They can't just be, yeah, I remember that idea from when I was a kid and somebody mentioned that. You know what I mean? It's got to be like forefront in our society. And I think that, again, those three principles alone, if they're lived, would change the world. And again, those are just three of 10 that are in this book.
Sure, sure. I definitely want to, I want to cover some of those seven steps. You mentioned step four was talking about a moral code. And just looking at you know, your information here, you had 10 laws to live by. Of course, not to be confused with Jordan Peterson's 12 rules for life. But you know, you had a core set of values. You know, you have laws of purpose, universal laws, and God's laws. And you know, why don't we go over some of the set, some of the steps individually, just briefly? You know, obviously your book looks like it's pretty lengthy and something I probably want to pick up. Although I have 100 other books, but I'm featuring you today, Andrew. So let me know, you know, what are the steps about?
Sure. And I get that there's a million books out there, and people do want to gain this information in other ways. People don't read as much as they used to. So I am doing videos, doing trainings. You can find those. I'm working on them right now. I'm just starting this. So I hope everybody can join and help support all of this, because it's the only way it's going to make it happen. we talk about the way, again, I start the book with the difference between success and true success.
Okay.
Let me just mention that. And you know, just so everybody's listening, you spend 30 years to write a book. And now you go on a show and you got to explain it all in just 2 minutes. So understand I'm not going to be able to cover everything, and I not do the best job in the world, but there are supplemental information and trainings that you can get this from. But this whole idea of success versus true success is, you know, humanity throughout all of human history has tied success to mainly wealth, power, and fame. Sometimes intelligence, being holy or even beautiful comes into that, which means like the more wealth, the more power you have, the more successful you are. But just to cut to the chase of it, if you study the lives of these people, I'm talking kings and captains of industry and all the rest of the super leaders in the world, you do not find that their lives automatically become great, that they know what to do, that their relationships are all wonderful, that they have, that they're all healthy all of a sudden, you know, I mean, that they know what to do at all the times. It's really a challenge to see if you will fall to the dark side, stay on the light side, you know, test of character and all the rest of those challenges that we go through as humans. And this is just makes it even more challenging. It's not a the goal, because if it were, right, if becoming successful meant all these great things happen, we wouldn't live in a world that is so broken, right? The world wouldn't be on the verge of World War III. We wouldn't be fighting the same old failed ideologies and ideas of, you know, people trying to take control and put their thumb over everybody, and the arrogance of men destroying everything and competing with each other in a harmful ways and all the rest of it. So if this isn't true success, you know, then what is the true goal of life? And I define it like this. It's what a loving parent or a loving mother wants for their children. Right? They want them to be healthy and happy, to find something that they truly are passionate about, ideally doing that to support themselves, you know, have great relationships, and all the other pieces that make up this wonderful, rich life that we're all after. And that's what everybody wants, right? We want to be happy. We want to find our people. We want to do something that we're happy about waking up to every day. And this is what the society should be geared to creating, you know, less desperation, more opportunity. Because through desperation and worry and strife and poverty and ignorance, we get rationalizations of anything, because it's either, you know, fight or starve. You know, it's either get out there and take, or you die. And nobody wants to just fade away. So we see a lot of strife in our society because the society is malformed. If we fix our society, we can create better people.
I like how you differentiated between success and true success, because, you know, you mentioned wealth and power, and one of my mentors, he had a program called Wealth, Power, and Influence. And, you know, in order to initiate any kind of change in this world, there is an element that you need to have some kind of wealth, some kind of power, some kind of influence. But you might feel successful having that stuff, but are you happy? And I think that's a big difference right there. Happiness, in my opinion, means fulfillment, yeah. Right? It means having integrity. It means, you know, being able to have that, those values of sympathy and mercy and justice and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's not wrong. Again, I don't want to make it seem like it's wrong to be wealthy or famous or anything like that. It's not. Those are needed positions and roles that we need to fill in our society, especially if we're going to really create a better world. Because like you said, they're positions that our society naturally creates just by the way that we form it. So the key though is like, how do we have these leaders in those positions and not have them be corrupted? You know, when you talk to children, nobody grows up and says, yeah, I want to be corrupted. I want to do evil. I want to be lost and be unhappy and have three divorces. You know, nobody wants that, mm-hmm. right? So how do these people, how do we as a human race fill these roles without us becoming corrupted? And that's where this whole idea of these foundational beliefs and understandings, a complete core belief system that you can use to navigate through life comes into play. Because again, if you just the three of equality, the golden rule, and respecting our earth, if our leaders really lived it, right? If they really, really like thought this way all the time, most of the inequities in the world wouldn't exist. They couldn't, because there's no way that you're mm-hmm. dumping that stuff in somebody's water supply. You're not destroying the lungs of the world that are going to supply not only oxygen, but so many solutions to all the problems we have with all the different animals and chemicals that we can find in these forests to supply us with solutions down the road. You're not doing most of the things that are being done in the world. The only people that are doing this have been caught up in this false idea that business is somehow separated from the world, and it's just business, and we just make money. That's all it's about. That is not what business is about.
Right. Business, well, we're taught that, you know, it's a dog eat dog world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that was it Stephen Covey who taught about the win-win philosophy, right? If they win, you win, and everybody wins. And, you know, that's definitely a shift in mindset right there. Instead of, you know, I'm just going to do whatever I can to get what I need and at the expense of everyone else.
Right. And that this idea of greed is good. And, you know, all of that has been, again, if you study history, it's like, you know, kings will literally stuff their houses with gold and wealth and, you know, overfeed themselves and throw tons of food away when their people are starving and don't have anything. And this is corruption. Right. This isn't the goal of life. And if you think it is, what I'm saying to you is you're lost. You are following and if you're a believer, you're following the path that the devil is showing you instead of what God is showing you. Mm-hmm. And this idea of, how do I say this? Most of the evils in the world are done by good people thinking they're doing good. Okay. Nobody's walking around saying, I'm following evil and we want to do evil to the world. Look at World War II, right? World War II, both the sickness of superiority rises in the East and the West, right? We're the chosen. We are the superior people of the world, and you people are lesser, right? This idea, go back to the Crusades. Followers of Jesus Christ, the King of Peace, somehow nations believed that it was right to go down and rape, murder, kill, pillage all the people that lived in Christ's homeland. Right? It's like, I don't know anybody. I've talked to Christians. I've talked to people all over the world. They would say, yeah, Christ would have wanted that. No, of course he wouldn't have wanted that. So how do we get into the mindset of, literally says in the Bible, not to kill, but mm-hmm. somehow it became the right thing to do. And this is where good people need to really take stock. And that's why we need this moral code. I cover religion in the book and how to know what type you're in and what they're all about and all the rest of it. But this idea of virtue, the idea of goodness at the center of them, you need to, as a human being, understand this in your heart, not be listening to other leaders that are directing you down a path. You need to be able to have a litmus test, right? You need to go, well, this guy's saying we should go murder. It literally says here we should not murder. Who is right here? Obviously, it's good not to kill. You know, it would have been a better way in the Crusades to go down there and talk to people and see if you could, you know, make some type of trade deal. Maybe you can visit Christ's homeland. Could have been a whole different world. Look at Hitler, right? Look at this guy. He's gotten so twisted in his beliefs that he believed that certain types of people, just by the way they looked, were automatically better than the entire rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Even though it's all about, you know, where your ancestors kind of stopped and, you know, who they bred with and over thousands of years that determine how people look. It doesn't have anything to do with character, your looks, right? It's really, that's what we're really concerned with as people is our, is this person a good person? Is he happy, funny, and all the rest of the things? That's what we like in people. So imagine if Hitler was a kid and instead of these twisted beliefs that he got, he became a good person. And he was really out there spreading the word of unity and faith instead of this destructive lying and, you know, manipulating everybody to create havoc. And I just want to say that this is the truth, is that most of the people that do evil in the world lie to the good people, right? They're not telling them the truth. They're manipulating, they're lying. They're giving opinions after opinions after opinions to sway the way that you think. And a lot of these, like in World War II, and even now, you can see the world is run by the news of the world is run by just a couple billionaires. You know, it's like 5 or 10 billionaires in the world that decide how you are going to consume your news. And just so you know, opinion is not news. So if you're watching news and all you hear is these people giving their opinions and telling you what they think and all of that, that's all designed to program you. It has nothing to do about informing you. I know I just went on there for a little
while. Right. Well, you know, I think we can agree and a lot of the challenges that the world is facing. And I'm thinking of a couple of things I learned in my youth. Number one, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I'm sure everyone knows that one. But, you know, the biggest challenge that I see, I mean, I'm going to speak religiously now and just share my faith a little bit. You know, I was taught that Christ came and, you know, he had the Sermon on the Mount and all these principles that we live on, but we were also given choice and agency. And, you know, the greatest thing that the devil ever did was convince everybody that he didn't exist. So by human nature, you know, people are going to follow the wrong path. You know, I'm sure God is weeping in heaven why his children are not, like, you know, following his way, right? The way. But how do people overcome human nature? I mean, why do you think it's so easy to go down a dark path? How can we, because you mentioned that what we need to do as a society, and which is, I agree with, we need to find a moral code, a moral compass to go by. But we already had one printed in scriptures. How do we get them to follow that?
Right. Well, the one in scriptures, unfortunately, was not complete, and it was not brought out in a way that humanity could all follow. It was mm-hmm. made like we're superior because we're Christians. Everybody else is lesser than us. I mean, if you just go back in human history, before Rome became Christian, it was a different faith. It was about the people and about being good. Mm-hmm. When the Roman emperor decided to become Christian and interjected this whole Roman type of mindset of superiority and everything into the faith, it became something else. This idea, I'm going to step back for a second. We're going to go religious, like you said. This idea of original sin, the idea that we have this potential to fail as well as succeed in life is really, again, it's the foment or the whole reason why we're here, right? If being good were super easy and there were no negative and all of that, there wouldn't be a challenge. We are the children of God. We are made in the image of God without the knowledge of God. We have free will. Free mm-hmm. will means we are not puppets. And to be challenged and to grow up a being that is created from nothing with a blank slate into a being that does understand the mysteries of life and understands what it is to be a good being, you have to be able to fail. You have to be able to be negative and all the rest. Otherwise, you can't choose the positive. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be much of a challenge, right, if it were just easy. So this whole setup, this whole universe that was made this way so that we as human beings could decide individually and collectively to make a better world. Now, I want to say this, that this time in human history, so many of us have come back and are born into this world to make this great change. This is the only time in human history that we could make global changes. We are literally globally connected like never in human history. We have more people. We have the resources. We have the knowledge on how to fix everything. This isn't Everybody, all the leaders that tell you, oh, it's too complex and whatever, you just got to do this. They're not real leaders if they don't know. It is not that complicated. Our systems of society, water systems, police systems, you name the different system, governmental systems, there are best practices and ways of doing things, checks and balances that we can put in place to not only make them good now, but to make them better and better over time. This is the true goal. This is why I'm starting the one party, the one movement, and trying to make the world a better place, is because it is so unbelievably simple if we just get together and make the changes that are necessary. And again, they're not like we have to fly to Mars and dig up this thing and bring it back. No, it's not even that difficult. We, you know, like water, we need to become masters of water. We need to be able to move it everywhere. We need to be able to clean it. There's not a very complicated idea. Once you understand, we can pump, we can clean, we can do this, we can make sure we get it to everybody's homes without lead pipes and all the rest of the good practices, right? It's not like it's inconceivable, right? The same idea is with all of our systems. If we just get them in line and stop being torn apart by these dividing leaders who think everything is too complicated and they are the only ones that know how to do anything and must put their thumb over everybody to make us comply and fall in line. It's not about that. It's about creating a better world of freedom so that you have the opportunity to sit around on Sunday and spend time with your children and watch them grow up instead of going on a march or, you know, be worried about somebody's going to throw a bomb down, in your neighborhood and all the rest. You know what I mean? It's like good people. The problem is that we're often siloed. We're often, I talk to so many, let me just say this. I know I'm going on a little bit. My mind runs so fast. Sometimes there's a million things that come across my mind. This is one of those principles that really we need to understand as a people. Our greatest power is unity. Okay. Mm. Meaning the more people we have in a group, think about it like this. If we had 1 billion people in a group all over the world that were for this change and half gave $1 a month to a cause, and the rest of them, some of them went to different types of uprisings that we may have, protests, but most people just clicked, you know, yes, I support this. Yes, I want this. Here's $1. Imagine the power of the leadership of that group walking into any organization. I don't care if it's an Exxon Mobil, if it's a government of the United States. We, as 1 billion, have immense power. We are the immovable force, the unstoppable force that can really change anything in this world. I mean, if you look at history, this is what have overthrown and started governments. Just look at the United States, the beginning of the United States. It was literally 2 or 3 guys in a bar just bitching, you know, why is it like this? These guys keep giving us more and more and more taxes. Oh, I can't stand it anymore. And the guy's like, well, I have a printing press. Really? Okay. Well, I'm a good speaker. Okay. Well, let's get out here and see what we can do. And guess what? Right. The United States is born. But it wasn't just those 3 guys. It was all the rest of the people that joined in, right? That threw the tea in the harbor and went to war and did all the rest of it. The true goal here, though, for good people is to make these changes peacefully. We, as good people, lose when we go to war. I don't care if we win. I don't care what happens. If we have to go to war, now we're killers. Now we're not spending time with our kids, growing them up. We're destroying. It's going to ruin our minds, watching our friends be blown up, killing people and all the rest of it. There's nobody that I've ever spoken to that has gone to war and gone through that horror that's like, yeah, that's awesome. I want everybody to go through
right.
that.
Right.
Right. Nobody wants this. So. Yet our leaders repeatedly keep bringing us this way. And honestly, man, you know it, and I know it. It's this arrogance of men. There's 2 types of leaders, right? There's those guys, you know them, and I know them. They all just want to put their thumb over everybody, want to make themselves feel superior. And they do it through all these weird tactics. And then our leaders get, you know, siloed. They get thinking that somehow it's only up to them and they're alone and they must, you know, fight to make all this stuff happen. And again, yeah, the sickness of superiority, right? It's infected humanity. And again, it goes back to this idea of original sin. This why we were created this way. We were created with the potential to fall to the dark side or take the light side. The light side is a harder step. You need to really take action to not be, you know, fall to sin or failures and all the rest of the what we don't want to be as people, because it's easy to be lazy and, you know, just eat yourself to death or whatever it may be, or smoke and all the rest. We need to take good actions if we're really going to be the best people we're going to be.
Well, you know, I agree with almost everything you said there. I think the challenge is that we definitely need more leadership in the world today. And there are several programs and books and, you know, different ways of becoming good leadership. But I want to touch back on some of the things you mentioned earlier. I think that we are going through a transition in humankind right now. You know, technology and community is a big one. I actually gave a talk about this in church the other day about community and how, you know, this is, and I'm going to shout out to some of my libertarian audience here. You know, everyone's talking about the individual self. And I think that might be a big challenge in the world is everyone's trying to break down into individual ideas instead of coming together as a community and solving problems. What happens is that people are categorizing themselves into whatever their political identity is or their religious identity is or whatever movement is going on. But what we're seeing is technology is starting to bring people together in ways that are positive. I mean, we may not no longer in the future have borders and states and, you know, different territories where people live in, but it may be all like technology based. You mentioned a billion people. Well, we don't have a billion people living in the United States of America, but because of the technology of the internet, we have a billion people who have the same idea, who are pushing some of these ideas and these motivation factors in there. But the only drawback is that there's still the problem of human nature and incentives, right? And so how do we flip the incentives of people who want to do harm to the incentives where people actually are benefiting each other? You know, how is that possible? Maybe through technology, maybe through leadership, but there's got to be something else there too.
Right. Absolutely. And that's where I believe the way comes in, because it gives you the fundamentals of what it is to be human and how to view the world. When I talk to people that read the book, it changes the way that you see things. It's like if you didn't understand the idea of freedom, once you explain it to somebody, it's not like they can unknow it. You know what I mean? Or even unwant it. You want it. It's like the difference between clean water or poisoned water. It becomes that obvious which is the best choice. When we talk about leadership and this idea of good people being siloed, the biggest weakness in good people is that we all want to do good. A lot of us are leaders, but it means that we end up with, I mean, just look at this. How many environmental groups are there in the world? I've looked it up. There are literally thousands. If you look at the people fighting for civil rights and equality and all of these good things, you add in another few thousand groups all over the world, individual groups. I'm fighting for, you know, freedom for the children in Africa or whatever it may be. They're everywhere. And then realize that if all of these organizations maybe still did what they were, they still have their individuality, but they also then joined in a much larger group, which I call the One Movement. It gives them all much more power, because now all the groups can then focus their people on one problem and solve it. Right. The problem is that good people are so deluded and we don't solve anything. I mean, just look at the Amazon rainforest. It is literally being cut down every day and it is going to be destroyed soon. I mean, we're at a tipping point. Yet the whole world is like, yeah, what do we do? What do we do? Imagine if all of these groups focused on this problem and use the techniques. And again, I don't want to go through them all right now, but on how to peacefully force positive change within Brazil, within that government. When you talk to people from Brazil, they don't want their rainforest cut down. You know, there's a few farmers there like, yeah, I can make money because now we can have more cattle that we can grow and sell to other nations. But there are ways that they can make money from the rainforest instead of cutting them down. And if we as humanity were able to help Brazil stand up as a nation and take care of their resources instead of destroying them with money and with just the focus of the world on them, right? It can change everything. You know, this idea of our leadership, the 100 people, 100 companies that are destroying the world, you know, these companies go into these third world nations, they make deals with the leadership to literally ravage the countryside because they a lot of times are corrupted. They make some back, you know, deal. You give me a billion and yeah, you can do whatever you want. I don't care. This is what needs to end, right? Mm-hmm. We either change them or we remove them from power. I mean, okay. It's that simple. There is no business out there that can survive without customers, without a positive, without humanity looking at them as something positive and buying their their products, right? If we don't buy their products and we all divest in them, they're going to go out of business and another entity can grow. If we buy up their stock, good people, and we put the board members and the presidents in that will do the things correctly, we can change the company. It's not that hard, especially with public companies, to make them change. I mean, literally, it's, you know, buy enough stock, put in the board members, vote in the CEO that's going to make the changes. I think this just happened to one of the biggest companies in the world, and they're literally changing the way that it works. I think it was one of the gas companies. It might be ExxonMobil. I'm not sure.
Sure. You know? So we have the book, and I encourage everyone to go out and take a look at it. You have a series of videos on your website where you're addressing some individual issues, which I think is pretty enlightening. I think they're on YouTube as well as on your website, correct?
Yes. Yes. I'm doing more.
Okay. What is the work of the Seventh Foundation? What is that about?
Yeah. The Seventh Foundation is really the company that hopefully will exist beyond me. And it is, you know, it's an entity that will hire people and do the marketing and the organization that's behind this. And the Seventh Foundation is an organization that, again, I have had kind of epiphanies and visions of how to fix this world since I was very young. And it will grow into being a real positive force in the world to show people the way to be the best and help support the one movement and one party and all the rest of the things that we want to do. And I just want to say this about the videos. I'm doing more. I started doing those years ago, and my video skills might not be that great, but the information in those videos is really, really good. Everybody that's watched them are, you know, a lot of the principles are in the book. So, you know, and again, I'm doing one right now. I'm working on training videos. I'm also working on a, what I call this, you know, State of the Union we just had. I'm going to do State of the World address and trying to really outline the biggest problems of the world and how we can fix them.
Right, right. I think that's good work. Now, I'm assuming you have a team of people who are helping you. So it's not just yourself doing it, right?
No, it is just me. Honestly, okay. Right now I was hit pretty hard with COVID and my other businesses aren't doing so well. I'm here taking care of my mom. My dad passed away and she's basically handicapped and I'm taking care of her. And, you know, you get $97,000 bills from the hospital and all those kind of things. It doesn't allow a lot of free money to be able to invest in this. So I am doing it all myself and I'm looking for people to help me. Obviously I can't do this, you know, all myself. So we just set up some Patreon accounts, other ways people can donate. Joining the one tribe, the one party, the one movement, getting this information and then uniting together to make the changes in the world is really how this is going to work. I can't do it myself. And honestly, it's a huge challenge. You know, when you're out here starting something and it's this big and you get all this great feedback, but everybody's so busy in their own lives that few people can take a lot of time out to just spend it with me. So I know there are people out there in the world that have extra time, have resources that they can donate, and we're trying to reach those. And then the rest of us can just click here and there and, you know, we can change the world. It's really, again, it's not as hard as most people make it out to be.
Well, I think it takes a special kind of leader. It takes somebody who is, I might call a visionary, somebody who's dedicated to making change. As Gandhi said, we have to be the change you want to see in the world, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm stepping out of my comfort zone to do all of this stuff. And I really want to do a good job because I don't know if I always come back to the kids. If you look at these kids, don't you want them all to grow up and have great lives? I mean, nobody wants their kid to grow up in a horrible world or have these horrible experiences. It does not have to be this way. You know, if we just share the right knowledge and take the right actions, we can fix everything. And we don't need everybody. We just need a good, solid group of people to do it. And that's how it's happened throughout all of human history. Right. And that's what gives me hope. You know, it's like, I'm obviously scarred since I was a kid going through all this stuff, the negative thinking and, you know, it's like being called stupid every day of your life. So I have these issues, but I am working so hard to not only overcome them, but to share the solutions with the world so that we can all become better people. And, you know, it's like everybody's support, the little, you know, likes and clicks and letters I get and things, they mean so much. Like you have no idea, you know. So
sure.
If you're watching the show, you know, write a comment, join the One Tribe, go to the website, you know, and join with us and offer some help. Even if it's just a click, it means more than you can even imagine.
Well, where can people find you? Is it 7way.me? Is that your website?
Yeah. I named it 7way.me because the way has 7 steps. We have the 7th foundation. So it's 7way.me. You can think of it like a command, like 7way.me now. You go to this website and you get all this good stuff. So it's the number 7, way.me. And again, I built this website myself. It's not the best, but it has the information on there and places where you can put in your email address and we can contact you. The trainings will be up there. We will be going through explaining the meaning of life, the true goal of life, how to achieve the true goal of life, as well as all the 7 steps and different types of videos and giving people all the knowledge you need to be the best person that you can possibly be, as well as to make a better world that we all want.
Well, that's perfect. Like I mentioned before, it takes leadership. It takes vision. Without vision, the people will perish, to reference scripture again. And Andrew, I want to thank you. You are one of those people who I think are trying to do good things in the world. I do wish you success. Andrew, are you Invictus?
Absolutely. I will not be conquered. I will always fight for the right and to be the best person I can be. So the key here is to never stop. Okay. You only become conquered and all the rest if you give up. So let's not give up and let's make this all happen. That's why I'm here, still alive.
I want to thank you, Andrew, for your time and wish you the best of luck in your operation here.
Thank you so much.